The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Being away for, I think, nearly 2 months, I was on retreat for 6 weeks. And unfortunately, the way my teaching schedule is going, I leave next Thursday morning to teach another retreat in New Mexico, so I'll be away next Thursday and the following Thursday, and then I'll be back again. So I think it was the class right before I left. One of you asked a question about balance, and the question was asked at about 2 minutes before 9 and said, say something about balance. And I thought, you know, I could give a whole talk on balance, so that's what I'm going to do tonight. Talk about balance. It's a quality that's really important in our, not only in our meditation practice, but in our lives. And I'd like to tonight speak about it from several different perspectives, both from the perspective of our lives and also from the perspective of our practice, our mindfulness practice, our meditation practice. And within that, I'd like to speak about it from different perspectives. Buddha actually, I mean, there's so many different teachings around this. The Buddha offered a lot of different ways to explore this topic, and I'm not going to cover them all in this talk. So I just picked a few different ways to talk about this topic. So to start with, I went to the dictionary and looked up the definition of balance. And there's a lot of different definitions in the dictionary. The ones I think that are relevant for our purposes include poise, equilibrium, equipoise, which I think it tends to have more of a mental aspect to it than poise. I thought for myself about it, and what do I mean by balance when I talk about balance? And usually what I'm meaning is balance of mind when I say balance. And by that I mean kind of a state in which we feel that we can make choices to respond to a situation rather than to be reacting based on our habitual patterns and tendencies. That's often where we are. When we're out of balance, we're just, you know, kind of careening from this to that, either in our outer lives or in our inner lives, that there's not a sense of being able to make a skillful choice. It's more like we're being impelled by our habits, our patterns. So there's many ways in our outer lives, in our work, in our families, in our friends, our friendships, and the things that we do. There's many ways in our day-to-day lives that we can get out of balance. Now, there might be the work-family balance that feels out of balance, or the work-play continuum that feels out of balance. Then there's a kind of another kind of continuum along these lines that we often, I think, get out of balance around is busyness and stillness. That we are doing so much that we don't really take time to rest and relax and just be. You know, sit and have a cup of tea. We don't really respect that kind of time in our lives. We really, and I think our culture as a whole is skewed towards the busyness. And we tend to be out of balance along that continuum. Another one that we may get out of balance along is taking care of others versus taking care of ourselves. That one we can We can either overtake care of others and lose track of what we need, or we can be so self-centered that we're not taking care of or connecting with what our friends and our families need. So when these areas get out of balance in our outer lives, we know it. I think we know what the consequences of it is. We tend to get exhausted or tired. We tend to get grumpy, frustrated. We anger easily. We get reactive when our lives are out of balance. And so this becomes a clue for us. It becomes a kind of a signal that perhaps there needs to be a shift that's made. I think in our outer lives, I just reflected on this a little bit, but it seems to me that in our daily lives, when there's a sense of something being out of balance, it often relates to how we're spending our time. That there's an imbalance in where our time, what our activities, where we're spending our time in our activities. So the mindfulness practice, the meditation, are helpful skills that will support us coming back into balance in our lives. There's a couple of ways that that it can help this. One is that we can begin to recognize the signals of being out of balance. We begin to recognize, oh, this state of mind, this grumpiness, this frustration, this irritation, this exhaustion is a signal. And instead of just trying to push through it and just keep going, we begin to, with mindfulness, actually, oh, this means I need to make a change. So mindfulness can help us to bring ourselves back into balance a little bit by recognizing these signals. Meditation, too, if we're, just the process of sitting down, slowing down enough to take half an hour or 45 minutes in your day to meditate, that I think is a great counterbalance for the way our culture tends to keep us in the busy mode. This is not a new thing. I mean, we may think it is, and certainly, I just read an article by Pico Iyer, who was asked to speak at a conference for marketing for the new millennium, for the new generation. And he was actually shocked when the presenter, the organizer of the conference, came to him and said, "What I'm interested in talking about is stillness." Because apparently, I mean, right now, the thing that you can market to is where there's the greatest lack. And there's a lot of lack in the area of stillness, especially with young people being so hooked up to the devices that we're hooked up to. So the stillness, the busyness that we have in our, I mean, the busyness that we have in our lives is, it feels like it's kind of way out of control. But even in the 17th century, Blaise Pascal said, "Distraction is the only thing that consoles us for our miseries, and yet it is the greatest of our miseries." He also remarked that all of our problems come from our inability to sit quietly in a room alone. So this practice of meditation gives us some of this stillness that allows us to bring a balance, bring some balance back into our very distracted, busy lives. So I spoke a few minutes ago about mindfulness allowing us or helping us to recognize some of the warning signs of being out of balance in our lives. You know, that they're kind of clues that we each get. And each of us will have our own ways of recognizing that we're out of balance. So mindfulness can help us recognize that. Another thing that mindfulness can help us do is begin to see when we're making choices that are running counter to what we actually want to be doing. I think when we get out of balance, there's also this sense that there's part of this being out of balance is that we're out of line with our deepest intentions. And mindfulness can help us to begin to recognize when we're making choices that are not in line with our deepest wish for ourselves, so that we can assess, look at what our priorities are, and begin to make choices that are in line with what our priorities are. And these priorities need to include being taking care of ourselves as well. The priorities need to include that our system actually needs time. I mean, maybe our priorities are to be helping others, and yet if we're only helping others, we're out of balance in that we're not taking care of ourselves. So we need to find that balance. And mindfulness can help us see when we're getting ready to step out of balance. In one of the lists that the Buddha put forward, it's a list that has seven qualities, seven of which bring the energy up in our mind. I mean, three of which bring the energy up in our mind, and three of which settle the energy in our mind. So three are kind of arousing, energizing qualities, and three are calming, settling qualities. And the seventh one is mindfulness. And the Buddha offered different times that it's helpful to cultivate these qualities. So when the mind is restless and distracted, that's not the time to cultivate these arousing qualities of mind. That's the time to cultivate these calming, settling qualities of mind. And when the mind is feeling dull and sleepy, that's not the time to cultivate the calming qualities of mind. That's the time to cultivate the energizing qualities of mind. So he had some sense of this is a balancing of these qualities of arousing the energy and settling the mind. Mindfulness, though, he declared, he said, mindfulness, I say, is always useful. So the mindfulness is really the kind of the balancer. It is the quality that helps us see when we're out of balance. It's the quality that helps us determine when we're out of balance. So this mindfulness, cultivating the awareness of what's happening in our hearts and our minds and our bodies, when we can see that these signals are coming up, signals of out of balance are coming up, we can use this mindfulness to help us recognize what's skillful, what's helpful in this situation. So there's kind of a mirror kind of, I don't know what the right word is, I can't quite find the right word, but things that are important in our daily lives, things that are qualities that are helpful to practice with, work with, things that support a balance in our lives, are also helpful in our meditation practice, certain aspects of that. That this quality of balance, while it's really important in our daily life, is also really important in our mindfulness practice. If we're out of balance in our daily lives, we're likely to be out of balance in our meditation practice. If we tend to be really busy and active and a doer, trying to get things done and fix things and change things in our life, that's likely to be reflected in how we relate to our meditation. We're likely to be one who says, I'm going to do this, I'm going to fix this mindset, I'm going to control this meditation. So we see that there's kind of a reflection, maybe that's the word I was thinking of before, that the way that we are in our daily life, when we sit down to meditate, it's like we get a reflection of that. And so the balance aspect, kind of some of the ways that we need to find balance in our daily life, maybe some of the ways we need to find balance also in our meditation, in our mindfulness practice. So there's two main ways I'd like to explore mindfulness in our balance in our mindfulness and meditation practice. One is around the continuum of energy and effort, and the other is around the exploring the quality of mental balance, of the quality of non-reactivity, of equanimity. So the Buddha had a great image around balanced energy. There was this one monk that was, he was a real dedicated, determined practitioner. And he was doing so much meditation, he would hardly sleep. He was sitting all night, and when he got too sleepy, he'd walk, and he'd walk until his feet bled. And, you know, he was so dedicated. And the Buddha heard about this and went to talk to him and said, you know, when you were a lay person, when you lived at home, did you play a musical instrument? Did you play the lute? And he said, yes, I did. And he said, well, you know, what happened with that when the string was too tight? Did it play music beautifully? He said, no, when the string was too tight, when I played it, the string broke. And he said, and what happened when the string was too loose? He said, well, it didn't make much sound. You know, it doesn't make music when the string is too loose. And the Buddha said, in a similar way, the effort in our meditation and our mindfulness practice needs to be neither too tight nor too loose. It's got to have that quality of, you know, just having the right level of balance to our effort. So I want to explore this a little bit, because this is an area, it's so common for us in our meditation to either be on the side of being dull and sleepy, or to be putting in too much effort, being too tight around our practice. It's like we think, okay, sit down, meditate, I'm going to pay attention to my breath, and it's like we put a vice grip around the breath, trying to stay with it. Or we're just kind of like, okay, just relax, and then we just drift off into a dream. So there's part of this is an exploration around our own minds and how our own minds relate to our experience. One teacher used the analogy of the effort that we're making is kind of like, you know how a radar works for a plane? The plane is flying on a course, and there's a radar set. And by my understanding, you know, it's following, the train is tracking that course with this signal. But it's almost never right on course. It's almost always a little off to the side, and then it corrects and moves back, and then it goes a little off to the other side, and then it corrects and moves back, and then it goes off to the other side. So it just kind of is never directly on course, but it's always kind of moving from one side to the other. And that's kind of the way we need to explore our effort. We can't just say, okay, I'm just going to do it perfectly. I'm going to make the perfect right amount of effort. What ends up happening is that we make a little bit too much effort, and then we realize, oh, I need to back off. I need to relax a little bit. And then we get a little drifty, and then it's okay, I need to bring a little bit more effort into the picture. So that it's a lot of this kind of monitoring what our minds are doing, looking at the experience and noticing, are we getting dull and sleepy, or are we getting agitated? Learning when to bring in the other qualities. So a few things, I just want to share a few things from my own practice that I found extremely helpful in this exploration around energy and effort in practice. Really, it's a matter of applying effort in a balanced way. So, one of the ways to think about this or explore this is to recognize that, like right now, in your experience, can you feel the sensations of your hands? Can you feel the sensations of your feet, your butt touching the chair, cushion, or bench? How hard is that? When I name each of those things, it's not very hard, actually. Usually you can experience that pretty quickly. So just the, you know, the moment of recognizing, oh, this is what's happening right now. Oh, I recognize that I'm sitting here, there's sound. So hearing is happening. You can know that you're hearing. It doesn't take a lot of effort to know that. So that we can begin to recognize that for a moment, in a moment, it doesn't take a lot of effort to actually be aware of what's happening. But what is difficult, or it's difficult, it's challenging, is to sustain that over time. So what we tend to do when we think about trying to sustain that mindful awareness over time is it's like we tend to kind of, you know, try to grab onto some experience. Okay, the breath. I'm going to be mindful of the breath. And we just like grab onto that and we force. It's like a forcing. It's a tension. It's a tightness. I've got to stay with this. So there becomes a tightness around it. What I've seen in my own practice that's helpful is rather than trying to think, you know, I sit down to meditate, okay, I'm going to be mindful, I'm going to be aware of this experience for the entire 40 minutes. You know, that's like trying to pick up the entire 40 minutes right in the first second of the meditation. The mind just, you know, it's not possible. But the mind also kind of gets tired just thinking about it, just when we sit down. It's like, oh, 40 minutes? Be mindful for 40 minutes. So instead of having that approach, you know, just sit down and just be mindful for a second. And then do it again and again and again. What we begin to recognize or see is that it's kind of more about the frequency of reminding ourselves to be aware. Because if we just remind ourselves, okay, notice a half a breath. This is actually Joseph Goldstein's, what he calls his secret teaching. That the amount of energy we need to make when we're paying attention to breathing is enough energy to be aware of half a breath. Right now, can you be aware of an in-breath? It may take about 2 seconds. Can you sustain that? And then let go. And can you be aware of an out-breath? So just enough energy to be aware for half a breath. And again, and again, and again, and again. And the mind will come in and say, and I have to do this for 40 minutes? It will come in and say that. But you can just, you know, recognize, oh, that's just a thought. Oh, here's an in-breath. Okay, here's an out-breath. Here's an in-breath. Here's an out-breath. So part of the practice can be, you know, just enough effort to be aware for a short time. That's all we need to do. And then the mind will wander. And that's fine. You know, the mind wanders. It's not a big deal. Just, oh, you're back. There's an in-breath. There's an out-breath. There's an analogy that I sometimes use. I'm sure I've used it with this group about, you know, kind of the at the beginning, you know, it's kind of like the amount that we need to remember or the frequency that we need to remind ourselves to be mindful. It's more at the beginning of practice. So we sit down and we need to remind ourselves every half breath to remember to be aware. Okay, in-breath, out-breath, in-breath, out-breath, lost in thought. Oh, okay, in-breath, out-breath. We have to kind of remind ourselves. But as the meditation moves along, what we start to see is that the momentum of the the practice kind of builds. And then we don't need to remind ourselves as much. We can kind of just ride with the experience. We can ride with the in-breath and the out-breath for maybe two or three breaths before we need to remind ourselves again. So the analogy that I like to use is that of riding a scooter. You know, little kids have these scooters. I've even seen some adults riding scooters recently. These little narrow things that you have your one foot on the scooter and then the other foot has to tap the ground to get it going. So it's kind of like the beginning, just to get the momentum building, you have to tap the ground pretty frequently to get the momentum going. And then you, for a while, you can ride. You know, you don't have to. Once you get the momentum going, you don't have to keep tapping the ground. It's actually kind of counterproductive to keep tapping the ground once the scooter is moving. But then you need to start to learn how to get familiar with the wobbly feeling that the scooter creates when it's slowing down a little bit. And then you need to tap again. So it's kind of similar in our meditation. You know, we get familiar with the wobbly feeling of the mind when it needs to be reminded. We get familiar with the sense of the mind, kind of beginning to lose touch with the present moment. And then we can just, be aware, be present. So that's one aspect of it that I found really helpful, is just this kind of recognizing that in a moment, it doesn't take much effort to be mindful. And using a kind of prompting, or just a little bit of reminding myself, be aware for a few moments. Can I do it again? Can I do it again? Can I do it again? Just for a few moments. So that's been really helpful for me. Another aspect that's been helpful for me in this exploration is because I tend to over-effort. You know, I'll find myself sitting there probably with I get a headache sometimes, you know, the mind is kind of pushing into experience. Sometimes in my meditation, I'll ask myself, how little effort do I need to make in order to be aware? That's a really interesting exploration if you tend to be an over-efforter. You know, just look at, I'm making quite a bit of effort here. Can I let go of some of it? Can I let go? I actually found there was quite a bit I could let go of. It could be quite relaxed. So there's this kind of balance in this effort and energy scale, there's kind of this balance between relaxation and it's an interesting balance between relaxation and alertness, but it's not an either or with relaxation and alertness. We can be very relaxed and very alert. So the relaxation piece is really important, but the alertness piece is also important. So that they both need to be strong. If you tend to be an over-efforter, it can be really helpful to bring in more of that relaxation. If you tend to be someone who drifts off into sleep a lot, it can be really helpful to encourage that quality of alertness. But the balance with relaxation and alertness isn't that it's one or the other. It's really that they both become quite strong. That as we, you know, get familiar with that place of just a little bit of effort moment after moment, the balance that happens there, just like the balance on the scooter, brings both the quality of relaxation because we're not overdoing the effort, and the alertness because the mind is quite connected with experience moment after moment. So this exploration requires patience. This is something that we each need to explore. And different times of the day, different times of of your practice, it'll be different. It's not like we can say, I figured out how to do this. It's really dependent on circumstances. It depends on how much sleep you've gotten, how much food you've eaten, there's so many conditions that come into play that change the level of energy and effort that we need to bring into practice. And so it's very much like that radar, you know? It's like we're kind of following a course, but we're always going to be, you know, just a little bit off and noticing, okay, oh, in this circumstance, I need to make a little more effort. Oh, in this circumstance, I need to make a little little less effort. There's an image that the Buddha offers as an analogy that I found. This is another tool that I use. It's just reminding myself of this image. He brings this in as an analogy. He talks about crossing the flood, crossing the flood of our reactivity, basically. You know, that moment by moment we need to meet our experience, meet our reactivity, meet our frustration, meet our joy. We just need to, moment after moment, meet experience. And in this image, he says, somebody asked him, so how did you cross that flood? And he said, by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood. He said, when I tarried, I sank. When I hurried, I got swept away. So by neither tarrying nor hurrying, I crossed the flood. For me, that image of just meeting each moment, you know, not lingering with it, but giving it its due. So it's just like meet the moment and then move on. Meet the next moment and then move on. That image of neither tarrying nor hurrying really has supported me when I was, especially when I was going through some challenging experiences. It's like when we have challenging experiences, we can tend to get out of balance in the energy area. And we can either try to force ourselves to stay with something, or we can just say, forget this. I'm not going to worry. I'm not going to try to. I'm just going to take a walk, and I'm just going to, you know, think about songs or something. I'm going to just distract myself. So this offers a different model. It's like, oh, just each moment, meet each moment. And I kind of envisioned this. I had this image of the Buddha walking across this water, just each moment. And that image was supportive for me. So the other aspect around balance has to do with this flood, the flood that I just mentioned, the flood of reactivity, the flood of greed, the flood of aversion, the flood of delusion. When we are imbalanced in our minds, we are either swept away by our reactivity, or we sink into our reactivity. Kind of like we either hold on to it or we get just kind of lost. With things we don't like, we tend to react with aversion, with anger, with frustration, irritation, annoyance, hostility. With things we like, we tend to react with eagerness, greed, excitement, impetuousness, longing. So there's this... It's very natural that we respond this way. You know, things are pleasant. We like them, we want them. Things are unpleasant. We don't like them. We want to get rid of them. It's kind of part of our biology in a way, although it is not ingrained. It is not hardwired in our biology. We do have a choice around our reactions. We don't think we do. We're so often... The ways in which we react to things are so conditioned based on our history, based on how we've been raised, based on the choices that we've made in the past, that we they're so habitual and ingrained that we often don't see the moment that we do have a choice. So that this reactivity feels like it's impossible. You know, it feels like there's no way to get around it. But the mindfulness practice can begin to allow us to recognize, to see the moments when we're just moving into that reactivity. Begins to show us the possibility, this practice begins to show us the possibility that we can transform this reactivity into a more balanced responsiveness. So sometimes there's a sense in this, the teachings that we offer around non-reactivity, that non-reactivity means just sitting like a lump on the log. You know, it means, oh, I'm not going to respond to anything. The teaching is not one of non-responsiveness. It's one of balanced responsiveness, as opposed to being automatically moved by our habitual tendencies. So this is where balance comes in. That when we are just, you know, kind of automatically reacting to things based on our habitual conditioning, we are not in balance. And again, we can feel this. We feel this in our experience. We know when we're getting out of balance. Often there is some feedback from the world, or there's feedback because there is suffering in our own experience. There's the recognition of, oh, I shouldn't have done that thing. You know, I'm suffering now. I'm experiencing the consequences of having taken that action, of having made that choice, of having said that thing to that person. I wish I'd never said that thing to that person. So we recognize that we've gotten out of balance by the consequences. So mindfulness can support this movement towards balance. Paradoxically, in some ways, I mean, it may sound like a paradox, one of the main ways to move towards balance around this reactivity, around these kind of habitual ways that we react to things that we wish we didn't, is we can move towards balance around that by noticing, being mindful of the reactivity itself in a non-judgmental way. Essentially, what we learn how to do with this mindfulness practice is to be balanced around the fact that we're out of balance. We learn to recognize what's going on. So much of our practice actually is noticing this reactivity, noticing when we're out of balance, noticing when we're responding in aversion and greed and frustration and annoyance. Oh, this is frustration. So the movement is to turn away, kind of to let go of paying attention to the thing in the world that is kind of triggering the experience, and to turn towards the feeling itself. What is this feeling of being out of balance? What is this feeling of longing? What is this feeling of frustration? So it's turning towards that and observing it, looking at it, noticing what's happening in our bodies, recognizing what emotions are around it, recognizing the thoughts that are coming up around it. This is a learning process for us, to learn how to meet this is that meeting, moment after moment. This is the Buddha walking across that flood, neither tarrying nor hurrying, meeting frustration, meeting reactivity, meeting all of the challenges that come up moment to moment, day to day in our lives. It takes some exploration to learn what it means to turn towards our reactivity. It's a middle way. It's this notion of balance. We're neither acting on these reactions, nor are we repressing them. We're allowing them with mindfulness. We are experiencing them. Kind of allowing them to live through us, but without acting out on them. So through this process of getting familiar with our reactivity, we begin to see when these reactions are motivated by unhelpful tendencies. You know, getting ready to say something, you know, over time with this mindfulness as we're exploring our reactivity, we might notice, oh, I'm getting ready to say something. And we feel the out-of-balance quality in our experience. Because we've been practicing noticing what it feels like to be out of balance, we begin to recognize, oh, there's that feeling of being out of balance before we take the action. This is where the mindfulness practice gets really powerful, that we begin to see how we're going to behave. We kind of see where we're going before we go there. And then we can choose, do I want to go there or do I want to do something different? So this is where we can begin to choose to not react, but to respond more skillfully. Maybe that thing that's about ready to come out of your mouth, maybe there's part of it that needs to be said, but maybe there's a tone in your voice or a kind of a skew to that thing that you realize, well, that part's not so helpful. But I do need to let this person know something. You know, that there's that ability that we begin to have to recognize which parts are helpful and which parts are not so helpful. Trying to decide how much of what I've got left in this to... I want to have some time for some comments and questions. I think I'll just... I'll move on to another aspect of this exploration of equanimity, because there's some other ways that we can explore this in our practice. There is the direct meeting of our reactivity with mindfulness. That's one way. Another way is through the cultivation of concentration. As our minds settle down, you know, we can, you know, take some time and sit down and meditate. And what we find is that our minds start to settle down. In that very settling down process, the mind gets a taste. We get a taste of what non-reactivity feels like. We get a sense of, oh, you know, the mind is kind of let go of all of the struggles to be present. When the mind settles down in concentration and it can just be with the experience, what's happening in the moment, it begins to get an understanding of what that non-reactivity feels like. And that's helpful. It's helpful to get a taste of that, because then we can almost recollect it in our daily lives. It's like, oh, yeah, that's worth that feeling of balance, of non-reactivity, is worth touching into. Another way that I've explored this in my own practice, and this has actually been quite an important part of my own practice, is that sometimes as we're exploring something, you know, looking at something with some kind of reactivity, maybe we're exploring anger or frustration, sometimes our mindfulness, our ability to be aware, isn't quite strong enough to really meet it without that non-reactivity. You know, we're kind of, yeah, I hate this anger. Ugh, I want to get rid of this anger. You know, so we're kind of trying to be aware of it, but there's an agenda behind it that's got the aversive quality to it. And so we need to be aware of that, you know, to be aware that that's the possibility, that we can bring the very quality that we're looking at into the observation. And sometimes it can help to bring a little bit of balance to the mind to bring some reflections, some conscious thoughts into the mind, reflect on, bring some wisdom reflections into the mind. So some of my favorites are, this is dukkha. Dukkha is the Pali term for suffering, kind of the out of balance feeling. I mean, in fact, the term itself, dukkha, is you know, it's brought from, the etymology of that word is that it's the a bad do part. The do part of the word means bad, and the ka part means the center of a wheel. So if you imagine a wheel that has a bad center, the place where the axle goes through of it, you know, it might be off center, out of balance. If there's, you're riding in a bicycle with a wheel that's got a, the balance, and the balance of the wheel is off, it's going to be a rough ride. So that's the feeling of dukkha, is that, you know, it's basically recognizing that out of balance feeling. It just doesn't feel quite centered, quite balanced, quite right. So that's one reflection we can make. It's like, this is this out of balance feeling. The Buddha actually recommended understanding this. So for me, this reflection, this is dukkha, reminds me that this is exactly what the Buddha was pointing at. He said we need to understand this. He was pointing at, understand this out of balance quality in your life. The understanding itself is what helps us to transcend it, what helps us to come into balance, rather than having this agenda to get rid of it. It's much more of an understanding. The wisdom is what begins to support the balance. And we can bring this wisdom in through reflection. This is dukkha. We can bring in the reflection, this is not me, not mine, not who I am. We can bring in the reflection, and this is one of my favorites, but it'll take a little bit of description. This is nature. This experience that I'm having right now is a natural consequence of everything that's happened to me in my life. That's exactly what's happening to us. Every moment that we are living, whatever is happening to us, is the perfectly natural outcome of everything that's happened to us up until now. So the reflection of the reflecting on that this experience that I'm having right now, it's just a natural consequence of what's happened in the past. For me, that's been a real helpful balancer. It's really helped to balance the mind, to just recognize that. It's like, oh, it's just a process. It's just something that's going on. It's like, here's the tree that's growing right now. Can I be with this tree? The experience has come up. This is the experience. This is what's happening. It's like this. So sometimes we can think of balance of mind. We think of balance of mind as maybe being kind of a dull place to be. You know, it's like we kind of feed off of reactivity in a way. You know, it's like we like the highs and the, mostly we like the highs, but you know, if we're actually really honest with ourselves, we are addicted to the lows as well. You know, that we like this. It somehow feels really meaningful to us when, you know, we're either really down or really up. And so we're kind of addicted to this. You know, we can't imagine that being in balance all the time would actually be, you know, a good way to live our lives. You might even think that if we're always in this place of balance of mind, this equipoise, this equanimity, that it means that we're indifferent, that we don't care. Equanimity, balance of mind, is not a place of not caring. It really is a place where the heart can be open to meet everything. The mind can be balanced and meeting all experience. It can meet the suffering and the joy more fully because there isn't this sense of needing to defend or protect or respond or react in a particular way. Here's a quote about this, and then I'll open it up for comments if there's any comments. Equanimity is a perfect, unshakable balance of mind rooted in insight. But in its perfection and unshakable nature, equanimity is not dull, heartless, and frigid. Its perfection is not due to an emotional emptiness, but to a fullness of understanding, to its being complete in itself. Its unshakable nature is not the immovability of a dead, cold stone, but the manifestation of the highest strength. So, are there any thoughts or comments that anybody would like to share? Questions? Yeah.
Hello, my name's Candace, and I just wanted to say thank you for this talk. I actually called in today for a personal day because I've been feeling really out of balance lately, so this is exactly what I needed to hear. Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't think Candace will mind. Candace is involved with the Occupy Redwood City, and I've been there too, and I really appreciate your talk also. And you've been a great help to me. And it's the lesson that we're not effective if we're out of balance.
Yes.
The one thing that makes me realize.
Yeah, that's a big one. You know, if especially, I mean, we especially when we're really in the in a mode of over of giving, you know, when our priorities and our wish is to give so much that that giving gets diminished when we're not replenishing the source from which that giving comes. So yeah, that when we're out of balance, we're less effective and there's less to offer. Yeah. That's a huge one. So, one thing I want to say now, since it's just a minute or so left, for this week, starting today and going through next Wednesday, Gil and I are offering all of the teacher dana that we receive to the Insight Retreat Center. So, I'm really excited and happy about this Insight Retreat Center, and it, you know, it's happening. It's going to happen. We do still have to do some fundraising to make it happen, but I need to get the renovation going. But I'm so happy that we're going to be offering this retreat facility where, I mean, the goal, the aspiration is to offer it on completely on a dana basis, just as this center is run, so that people will be able to come to retreats without paying a fee for the retreat. And to make this vision possible, Gil and I are hoping to inspire some community support by offering our dana for this week to the center. So I wanted to say that. I don't often talk about dana, but I would encourage you to offer some dana so that I can give it away. So thank you all for your attention.